Yeah, I'm with the War Legacies Project. It's a not-for-profit organization that's based in Vermont that focuses on the long-term health and environmental impacts of war. I'm not a public health specialist, but I've been focusing on the long-term impacts of Agent Orange in Vietnam for about the last more than a decade. This is, of course, the barrels of... I have some. The barrels of one of our agents of concern, which is the Agent Orange, which was 245T, two herbicides, 245T and 24D. The 245T component, as you probably are well aware, was contaminated with dioxin during the manufacturing process. And that is something that we're still dealing with the ramifications of that in Vietnam today and among veterans of the war as well, U.S. veterans, and others around the world who were exposed. This is a spray map to give you an idea of exactly how much herbicides were sprayed. This is not just all Agent Orange, but all herbicides. There was over 21 million gallons of herbicides sprayed. About 12 million of that was Agent Orange, which is the dioxin-contaminated component. About 14%, it was sprayed over about 14% of the south of Vietnam. So to give you an idea, that's a area that was defoliated is about the size of Massachusetts. Over some areas were sprayed many, many, many times, like the saw the picture earlier of the mangroves. It wasn't just Agent Orange, as I said, but green, pink, and purple were also contained 245T, so we're also contaminated with TCDD. There's also the, as I think Mary will talk about earlier, the IOM also looks at herbicides in general. I'm focusing mostly on the impact of TCDD, of dioxin in Vietnam in this talk. This is what Vietnam looked like at the top in the 1960s. As you can see, as late as the late 1990s, areas that were completely defoliated with the herbicides remained defoliated unless there was intensive reforestation done by the Vietnamese, and it caused other issues like erosion that you see in that slide on the far side. Estimates have been made about how many people in Vietnam were exposed, as well as how many military. The work of Jeannie Stellman and her colleagues at Columbia University, by looking at the spray data from the U.S. Air Force, estimated that there was between 2.1 and 4.8 million civilians living under the spraying at the time of the war. Then, of course, we have the military veterans, North Vietnamese who came down from to fight in the South, Arvin soldiers. The U.S. VA uses something it's called a boots on the ground qualification. If you were a veteran and you were in Vietnam, you were considered potentially exposed. In the case of Vietnam civilians, the population at the time, 1968, was about 17.6 million. But then again, that's potentially exposed. It's difficult to know exactly who was exposed. The problem today in Vietnam is that there are still dioxin hotspots. Research done by a Canadian group, Hatfield Consultants, looked at areas that were sprayed by airplane, particularly in the central highlands of Vietnam that were heavily sprayed, and did not find high levels of dioxin in the soil. The dioxin either broke down over time in the sunshine of Vietnam. Likely it was washed away in monsoonal rains and pooled somewhere. So there are potential other hot spots. But the area of concern, particularly now, are the former military bases, particularly the Ranch Hand bases, where the herbicides were stored on the base, where there were frequent spills. There are three bases of main concern right now in Vietnam where there are high levels of dioxin, and that the Phu Cat Air Base, Binh Hoa, outside of Ho Chi Minh City, and the Da Nang base. Those were three Ranch Hand centers of activity in Vietnam. And again, research by Hatfield and others, including Dr. Schechter, have found that there are extremely high levels of TCD, the contamination in the soil and in the sediment of ponds. And it's the sediment in ponds which is also a particular concern, because people up until fairly recently were eating the fish that was in those ponds. These are some examples of levels of TCD that was found in fish that people had in ponds where people were fishing, and as a result, Hatfield also found high levels of dioxin in the blood of the people who were eating the fish and ducks and whatnot from that area. So it's been a major public health concern in Vietnam that we're finally starting to do something about. The Vietnamese government has identified Phu Cát, Binh Han, Da Nang as the three priority hotspots in need of remediation. Right now, for Vietnam, that the level of it's 1,000 parts per trillion for industrial soil and in soil, and 150 parts per trillion in sediment, which requires remediation. Basically, following the currently what's the U.S. standard. Things are slowly happening, though. After 50 years, the Binh Hoa base, about 141,000 cubic meters of soil and sediment are in need of remediation. Currently, they've put a cap on the area where the large, very large tanks of herbicides were stored in Vietnam. They've stopped fishing and raising of ducks in the lakes that are on the base. That happened just a year ago, though, so it's fairly recent. And some of the soil has been removed and is currently being stored in a contained landfill for future remediation. The Da Nang Air Base, the picture on the right-hand side is, if you've ever been to Da Nang, when you get off the airplane, that area is only about 100 meters from where you'll be playing. It's not that far from the airbase. And Da Nang is obviously a very popular airbase in Vietnam, with a lot of tourism along that coast. So it's not only for transportation purposes they want it cleaned up, but as you see on the left-hand side, there's houses that abut the base, and people who lived in those houses were, until that wall was built, fishing in the lake just across that road, which was heavily contaminated. Some measures have been done, the perimeter fence, a sediment pond to keep the dioxin that's on that hot spot, which you see on the top right, from going into the lake. But right now, which we'll hear, I won't go too much into that because I guess someone's coming from USAID to go into more details of the cleanup. But the U.S. then has agreed to clean up that hot spot. Right now, they've allocated about $40 million for the task. It's expected to be about that, and we'll learn more later today about how they're going to do that. Phu Cát's the other base. Again, there's been some efforts to at least stop the dioxin from continuing to go into the local population. But there's at least 25 other potential hotspots that were former areas that we know their Agent Orange and the other dioxin contaminated herbicides were stored. So far, the only one that's been addressed is a small base that's in Alui Valley. It's up by the Lao border, where people prior to this had been raising fish and grazing cattle, and a forester that I work with has planted a honey locust fence. Honey locust trees, if you know it, have very, very sharp thorns around the base to keep the local population at least from raising animals and fish on this area. The Vietnamese are finding very similar health impacts that the IOM list has, which we'll hear more about later. Not all of them they're finding, but partly that's because an issue of record keeping and like, for instance, Parkinson's. There are clearly people in Vietnam who have Parkinson's, but we really don't know a lot of the how many. This is why I won't go into this. We'll talk about that a little later. But the Vietnamese recognize, unlike the U.S., recognize primary liver cancer as being associated with Agent Orange. Others have said that could be the high levels of hepatitis C that are in Vietnam and not necessarily the herbicides. But the biggest area of difference is the birth defects in the offspring of exposed people. The Vietnamese believe that there are large numbers of second and third and even fourth generation now children being born, and they believe that that is related to their parents or grandparents, in some cases great-grandparents' exposure to Agent Orange. And that's an area of great disagreement, as you can imagine. But from my work, working with people in Vietnam who are suffer from severe and multiple disabilities, I don't focus on whether this child's disability is caused by Agent Orange or not. My work is on what can be done to help those who are suffering from severe multiple disabilities in Vietnam. Vietnam has about 1.6 million births a year. This is information recently from the CDC had a presentation in Hanoi a couple weeks ago. Can't see where the information comes from that's down below. But and so the rate is pretty average. But what's not known is where those disabilities are. Are they pooled in certain areas? For instance, the heavily sprayed areas or areas where people who were exposed, are there higher percentage in that population? We really don't know because there's no baseline data from before the war, and there's not a systematic birth defects registry in Vietnam. And there's no comprehensive survey of children with disabilities. There's pockets. There's a lot of information known about Da Nang, but not other parts of the country. So it's really hard to make those, conclusive conclusions about whether it was Agent Orange causing this or not. But as I said, it's not something I focus on more. I'm focused on what can we do. The U.S. government has allocated over the past, since 2007, a bit over $40 million for, mainly for the cleaning up of dioxin hotspots, but there's also been $6 million allocated for related health programs in Vietnam. This next allocation is for $3 million that the USAID will put a request for proposal out shortly to address health impacts in Vietnam. And one of the possible ways some funding will be spent is to help Vietnam develop newborn screening in Vietnam. Right now, there's only 30 localities in Vietnam covering about 10% of births that do newborn screening, and they only screen for those four conditions right there. So the CDC has suggested and is interested in working with Vietnam to help them expand newborn screening, particularly in cases where if you catch it early enough, you can have some preventative measures. And also a birth defects registry pilot is another thing. Right in Vietnam, the total number of children with disabilities is about 1.2 million according to UNICEF. And most of those, about 80%, live in very rural areas. So access to care is there is no access to care. There's a huge need in Vietnam for early identification so that early intervention programs can begin at birth or shortly after birth. But to do that, you also need to develop the infrastructure. You need the rehabilitation centers. You need physical therapists, occupational therapists, doctors, nurses, midwives who are trained in identifying. There are a handful of speech pathologists in Vietnam. There's a handful of occupational therapists. There is speech physical therapy in Vietnam, but it's a technical program. It's unlike here, where it's physical therapists in Vietnam follow the doctor's orders of what you would do to manipulate. It's very passive. So there's a huge need for development of those fields. Proper adaptive equipment. There's many programs that are providing wheelchairs to Vietnam, but not necessarily the right ones for the right child. Particularly children with cerebral palsy, a hospital-type chair is not going to help that child very much, and that chair ends up sitting in the corner, not being used. Other huge needs, as I said, are prenatal care and screening. There's been a huge increase in Vietnam, when you're pregnant, you get a scan. What is it called?
Sonogram,
right. And in some cases, women will go to a sonogramist instead of going to their doctor, and the sonogramists are not very well trained. In fact, people just go out and buy a sonogram machine and start a business. So there's a huge need for a reinvestment in prenatal care in Vietnam, particularly with a lot of attention recently to the Agent Orange issue. There's a lot of fear. Some women have had 10, 12, 15, 20 sonograms in a pregnancy. There's a huge need to address that. I'll move on a bit. I won't get too much into cancer issues at that side of it, but that's another need. CDC recommends expansion of cancer surveillance in Vietnam. Right now, those are the 6 places where there is a registry, but covering a very small amount of the population. I just met with Jeannie Stellman, whose research I talked about a little bit ago. She is starting a new a website that, for those who are interested in getting down to the nitty-gritty details of where the herbicides were sprayed, this website will allow you to put in your coordinates of where, if you're a veteran, where you were in Vietnam. You can find out what was sprayed, when it was sprayed, how far within. There's a lot of controversy over this from some veteran sectors, because they're worried then the boots on the ground distinction of, if you were in Vietnam, you're potentially exposed, that's a qualification for benefits, that a system like this will show, well, you were in, you were in a canton, but nowhere near any spraying, so therefore you weren't affected. But it might be of interest for some researchers who are looking at exactly where the herbicides were sprayed. You have issues of drift and all that too, but anyway. I'm going to end with, if you want anything else you want to know about this issue, we've developed a website, the AgentOrangeRecord.com, where there's a lot of research. I'm adding more to it. There's a link, for instance, to the study that David Butler just mentioned. And if you have research that you've conducted on this issue, I'd be happy to add it as well. It's kind of a one-stop shop for everything and anything you wanted to know or did want to know about Agent Orange. It's on that website, or will be shortly. I'll leave it at that.
That's the most amazing talk I ever heard by someone who just flew in on a red eye from California. Are there questions, comments? Yes.
So you're saying that you're interested about helping people with disabilities. So I'm not sure you said much about that. Other than, are you talking about these things like meeting the particular professionals and all of that? That's kind of your
Though of course it comes with resources, and that's a big issue. I mean, one of the things I would like to see with any of the, I mean, I do advocate for more U.S. government funding in this area so that USAID can fund programs. Particularly, I mean, my push is really to get a lot of training at the institutes in Vietnam who are training the primary care or the care providers. Not a lot of this, that is happening right now. There's a lot. You come in, an NGO may run a program. It might be a 2 or 3 week training program. Then they go. We don't have the resources to do it. I spend more time trying to connect people to do that.
So then, who, anybody, does anything with people with disabilities and teaching them to live independently and go all over that kind of world? Anybody does do that? Is that something that's happening there?
There are some happening, but which I kind of skipped over that. Programs right now are reaching about 10% of the population. There's a lot of focus in Da Nang, because that's where U.S. government funding has gone. East Meets West Foundation is one of them, an organization called Children of Vietnam, Vietnam Assistance to the Handicapped, which is actually just across the river here. There are some programs. There's a lot of some Australians groups as well. So there are things happening, but it's very, you know, small pockets. It's not reaching the national level, unfortunately, and that's something that really has to be done. There has to be buy-in from the Vietnamese institutions and government.
I have a question about the Agent Orange itself. Do I understand correctly that the herbicide had a contaminant in it that was unintentional?
It was contaminated during the manufacturing process?
Accidentally.
Well,
yes
and no.
In the process of formulating 2,4-D, there are trace contaminants of other chemicals that were produced. One of the trace contaminants was 2,3-7-18-CDB. As manufacturing processes improved, the level it wasn't contaminated because somebody else poured it in or anything like that. It was simply a byproduct of the chemical manufacturing process. Whenever you're manufacturing complex hydrocarbons, mm-hmm. you're going to produce trace amounts of other substances as simply byproducts of the reaction process. You're not getting 100%.
The 2,4-5-T was in the process of being made, contaminated with the most toxic dioxin that exists. The 2,4-D had far, far less of the dioxin. And now 2,4-5-T is being manufactured with much more expensive and methods. So where it is used worldwide, the amount of dioxin is much lower than this rather cheaply prepared Agent Orange.
It really varied by manufacturer and batch to batch and year to year. When the U.S. was ramping up, particularly in the 60s, I mean, Agent Orange itself wasn't used until 65, but 2,4-5-D was used before that in other blue, purples and pinks and whatnot. But in 68, when we were spraying massive amounts and requiring the chemical companies to produce massive quantities, many of them sped up the process to manufacture the 2,4-5-T and creating it at the chemical reaction at a much higher temperature than it was recommended by chemical companies, by industry. And that, so you, in some cases, some companies had 47 parts per trillion, say, instead of, like Dow, for instance, had some of the cleanest Agent Orange, so, you know, less contamination.
And there's no real half-life in this stuff?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there is.
But the TCDD and Agent Orange, one of the things the Air Force Ranch Hand study did show is that in their situation, it was 7 to 11 years to be half the level in that kind of application. With Viktor Yushchenko, the very high level that he was poisoned with went down much faster. And when we measured, starting in 1984, the team I was affiliated with and am affiliated with, we were able to find some people with elevated milk and blood and fat tissue with levels as high as during the spraying. And in the soil, our team looked at Benoit and found over a million parts per trillion of the dioxin of Agent Orange, when again the United States uses this figure and Vietnam is of 1,000 parts per trillion rather than a million as an area that's considered relatively safe. But EPA is relooking at this right now.
Yeah, and the half-life varies where it is. I mean, if it's in sediments, different than if it's in soil, the level, the layer. In soil, it's believed to be about 100 years, but no one knows precisely for sure.
And if the sun is beating down, it may be less. You had a question in the back?
How much responsibility has the Vietnamese government taken in terms of the remediation of the environment and the health impact on the people? Mm-hmm. Or has that sort of responsibility fallen on the U.S. and other NGOs?
No, I mean, for the environment, a lot of those temporary remediation measures I showed quickly through there, that's been done by the Vietnamese government and their funding. They've paid for that. They're contributing in the Da Nang cleanup with the U.S. government. They're also contributing funding for that. They also have a system similar to our VA system for people believed to be affected by Agent Orange who have health conditions believed to be affected, including children. They spend about $50 million a year in benefits to not everybody, same here, not all veterans receive it either, but so that's at about, you know, $18, $19 a month stipend that people who apply for that will receive. Plus, they are supporting building rehabilitation centers. There's an organization called the Vietnam, the Association for Victims of Agent Orange and the Vietnam Red Cross have massive fundraising they've raised over $20 million from the general public to build rehab centers to provide, but these are still only reaching about 10% of the population.
Thank you very much.